We're live on YouTube, X, formerly known as Twitter, Rumble, and we will be live on Rockfin here in a moment when I see that little red go live button. Good morning to everyone, about 5:15 here on the East Coast. Here I am looking very stupid in these very large headphones. I know that these are very large headphones that I'm wearing. I am completely aware of that. I don't know where any of my other headphones are, so I have no choice but wear these cartoonishly big headphones. These headphones that make me look like someone who doesn't realize that they're too old to start a Twitch account. I mean, these headphones make me look like Steve Buscemi's character on 30 Rock when he went undercover and pretended to be a high schooler. I understand that. They do not feel like age-appropriate headphones. The only ones I have right now. So pardon me my embarrassment for wearing these oversized headphones that dwarf my tiny little head. I wouldn't do that if I had any other option. Anyway, we're going to dive into the show. The transcript trick, the USPS 2024 election powder keg, and Biden is dumb on purpose. This is the Propaganda Report. I am Brad Binkley with my gigantic headphones. Hope everybody is doing well this morning. Let's dive in, and I don't want to talk about this for too super long. I want to make sure all these streams are up and going, by the way, because I did this in kind of a rush. Yeah, they appear to be up and going. I don't want to go into this for too long, but I do want to point out when it comes to the Trump trial update, that's what this is. I do want to point out the little trick that the New York court system is attempting to pull on everyone. I mean, they must think everyone is really stupid with this trick that they're trying to pull. And you probably are familiar with the fact that there's no video or audio recording devices allowed in the courtroom during Trump's New York trial. And that has nothing to do with a choice. Apparently, there's a law in New York where the recording devices, audio or video, are not allowed. And there in most states, when it comes to state court, cameras are allowed in the courtroom. It's to the judge's discretion, the court's discretion. Now, federal court, there are no cameras allowed. But in most states, it's up to the court, except for New York. So nothing is allowed. And because no video or audio recording devices are allowed, that means that everything we've learned about this first ever criminal trial of a former president, all of it has come to us through the mouths of mainstream propagandists and gatekeepers who are the select few who have been allowed into the courtroom. You know, people like Rachel Maddow. These are the people who have relayed information to us about this trial, and we've had no other way to find out information about it because of the rules where no recording devices are allowed in. That's not exactly the best way to get the public to trust the information that they are being told about this very, very important trial. You know, this historic trial. We're all being told this is such a historic trial, and they want us to trust us. So with the stakes being so high as they are, you want to build the trust in the information. You want to build it up, right? And so, I hate when I say right, but I do it because I know that Adam Curry and Dvorak make fun of that all the time. And there's not too many people that I care about what their opinion of me would be. And not that they would even hear this. And not that I honestly even care what their opinion would be. But they make fun of that all the time. And so I always catch myself doing it. So I try not do it unless it's actually an appropriate time to pose the question, right? Question mark. But there, it wasn't right, right? I derail. Back to the point at hand. They need to build trust in the information coming out about this trial. And the only people, we have no direct access to the information as the public. We're getting it from the gatekeeper propagandists. Not a good look. So the New York state court system, I guess, recognizing this problem and attempting to mitigate it, they made a big announcement yesterday. This is the trick. They announced that they will be making the trial transcripts available to the public on the court's website. I mean, that's fantastic, right? They said that they're taking a novel step to ensure broad and continuous public access to this extraordinarily high-profile case, and that this measure is in the interest of the public good and that it aligns with the court system's commitment to judicial transparency and its ongoing efforts to enhance public access to and understanding of the courts and the judicial system. That's why they're making the transcripts available for us all. We no longer have to go to the Rachel Maddows of the world and the media to tell us about what they saw inside the court. Or so it would seem. Until you go over to the New York court system's website and you actually look at the transcripts that they made available, which for some reason, these transcripts of Trump's trial that are publicly available now, have been formatted in a way that is the exact opposite of how every other publicly available court transcript in the existence of humankind has been formatted. And I've read so many of them, thousands and thousands of pages of them, especially with the Epstein court documents going all the way back to 2016. Court transcripts and documents, which are usually hundreds of pages, they are searchable, downloadable PDF files because nobody reads them front to back. It's impossible to do that unless you have all the time in the world or you have a staff to do it, like people in Congress or people on CNN and other MSM networks have. Regular people don't have the resources to spend all day reading hundreds of pages of legal documents. So you enter search terms to skip past all of the things in legal documents that are just the, you know, not irrelevant to the court, but irrelevant to everybody else. It's not the content. It's the names and the so-and-so and all the procedural stuff. So you enter the search terms. Every court document I've ever encountered over 15 years, longer than that, actually, I was in law school, before that, have always been searchable, downloadable PDFs. But for some reason, you go to the New York County System website, and what these documents, these transcripts, they're not searchable, they're not downloadable, they're not PDFs. They are none of the things that these types of documents usually are. And here's what they are. I'm going to pull these up on screen because I thought this was I'm harping on this because this is kind of a minor thing under the radar that I think is actually very important because of the trick that they're trying to pull on people because they think we're stupid. And they put them out there and they don't want you to read them. That's what this is. The New York court system put the documents out there and they put them out there in a way that makes them impossible for the average everyday person to actually go through them in any productive way. And they celebrate it. Here we are for transparency, judicial transparency, and open access to the people. Go fuck yourself. I mean, fold up in half a New York court system and literally fuck your own face because you're full of fucking shit. You did not do this to give the public open access. You did this so that you can make it look like there's full transparency so that people would trust the fucking cocksuckers on CNN who waved around the court documents. We have the court documents. Well, they have the court documents, so why would they lie to me? I could just go verify them in the actual transcripts. They know you never fucking will, because as soon as you go to the fucking transcripts that you made available, you are deterred. It's a deterrence. You're pushed away from them because they're so inaccessible for anyone in the world. They have all these standards on websites where it's accessibility, where they'll make the dialogue big or they'll read it to you in actually a pretty, fluent and a good voice at this point. Like, you can click read a document on Google and you'll think, some sexy British lady's reading to you. It's like, wow, where's this chick? It just makes you wonder why sometimes things are published that have kind of robotic things when they can do that easily. But that's neither here nor there. The point is, They could have made these documents easily available and searchable, but they didn't on purpose because they don't want you searching them. They want to create the illusion that they're available so that people, when they look at the ones on CNN and other networks talking about it, make assertions about the case. They just assume they're telling the truth because why would they lie when the public transcripts are available? It can be verified. Well, it's because they know you won't go check them. And if you do check them, they know that you'll be deterred by the way that they've been made available. Now, this is not what I intended to get to right away. I was going to show you the documents first, which I'll do now. But pardon me if it takes me a second to kind of rearrange my thoughts in my head, because I had this show planned in a whole different way. But let me show you the documents the way they made them available. And as I said, this is not protocol, the way they do this. They do not, this is like the weirdest format of making a document available that I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen this before. I've been doing this for a very long time. So this is the New York Court's website. And you might not be able to see it that well on the screen, but right, I'm going to go ahead and click on. This says President Donald Trump, civil trial, and then you have President Donald Trump, criminal trial. Transcripts, right here. I'm going to click on transcripts, and see, this is what it makes you do. It makes you do this throughout. It makes you verify that you're a human, because there are so many fucking robots that are dying to get access to these transcripts. God dang it. If they let one through, so you got to verify you're human, which all you have to do is click on that right there. That's how stupid robots apparently are. They can't even click on that square. Here are the two transcripts they've made available thus far. See, it's funny too, because it says pdfs.newyorkcourts.gov, suggesting that these are going to be PDFs that we click on. They're not. People versus Donald Trump transcripts. And clicking on the second one here, which is, you see what comes up. Oh, shit. I'm not showing you guys the right screen. Let me get this over here. Sorry about that. Let me show you the right screen here. Here it is. And I'll take it back so you can see it. Let me reverse that. All right. So there it is. The pdfs.newyork.gov. You click on this here. Bam. So this is the transcripts, the way that they come up, right? And I just did it again. Make sure that's not big. Make that a little bit small. 100%. So you can see those on screen. And this is 100% maximization of the screen. I don't have it bigger or smaller. And what you see on screen is the format that they have uploaded the transcript. This is an image. This is some sort of image format. And see my mouse here, if you're watching video? I'm right-clicking, and I cannot right-click and save this. I can't save it. I even go up here, and I have no way to... I can print each individual page if I want, but that's not what people want when they go to look at documents. They want to search documents. These are hundreds of pages of documents. It's 120 pages on day one, couple hundred pages on day two. So you have specific search terms you want to go look at, and you can't do that here because the way they uploaded these, this is one page at a time. Page two, page three. Page four, they uploaded these documents, these transcripts, where you have to view them as an image that you can't download, one image at a time. The only way that you could possibly search this document is if you screenshotted every single image, hundreds of images individually, downloaded them onto your computer, and then combine them into one document that you then made searchable by doing some sort of formatting where it takes a image and turns it into text. And when you do that, the accuracy of the image to text, if you even know how to do that, most people don't. I don't. Right in the second I could research it, but I've actually never done that. I just know that you can. The accuracy is not 100%. So these were uploaded in a way that makes it impossible almost for anybody who is not just incredibly skilled and has a lot of free time on their hands or a staff at capturing and, converting these to searchable. This is ridiculous. And how you know it's ridiculous is this. Because the day that the first transcripts were released, last night, well, I guess the night before last night, depending on when you're listening to this, the day one transcripts, those were PDF format. Those were downloadable. They were not, however, searchable, which I thought was very interesting. Let me show you why I thought that was interesting. They've since changed them, by the way. The day one scripts are no longer downloadable or PDF. They're the exact same thing as this, the same image formats. Bullshit. I mean, this is bullshit. It's so obvious. They're forcing you to look at it just one page at a time, trying to prevent people to actually read the transcripts, while also saying, well, we made them publicly available. We're about transparency. Well, they're sucking their own little fucking tiny dicks. I mean, fuck these people, man. The reason this is interesting to me is because this is the news release on screen right here. So as I told you a moment ago, the day one transcripts originally, they were in PDF format, but they were non-searchable. And as I said, that kind of, you know, raised my bullshit alarm, because it takes effort to make a document non-searchable like that. And you know that it wasn't their default, because when you look at this image that I have on screen, not image, this PDF file that I have on screen, which is a news release from the New York court government, the same website that is announcing New York courts to publish daily transcripts of Trump trial, and it even includes the link to the transcripts in here. This document is, as you can see here, a PDF document that's downloadable, which you can see the downloadable, it's clickable, you can click it, it downloads, and it's searchable. And look, I'll show you it's searchable. A, hold on a second here. Let me see. New York, so there you go. You can see the search. You see it's searchable online. So they created this news release announcing the publication of documents, transcripts about Trump's trial using a downloadable, searchable PDF document. And then they made the transcripts initially a PDF document that was downloadable but not searchable, which is fine, because you can download that and convert that into a searchable PDF format, which I did do. But they must have recognized that, because when I went back the second day to look at day two of the transcripts, which I only went to because of the way CNN was boasting about, we have the transcripts, they're the ones that alerted me to it. When I went back and looked, they had changed the format of day one's transcripts and to match day two's transcripts, which were those images that are one at a time. You can't download. You can't search. They don't want you reading them. That's the point. And I'm harping on this because this is just such a typical strategy by these cocksuckers to make it look like, oh, we're such the good guys. We're laying it all on the line. Everybody look at it. You don't have to rely on the media. But the fact is that these exist. People will go watch Rachel Maddow. And as I said earlier, they'll say, why would she lie to me when I could just go verify in the fucking transcripts? Because you never will. You never fucking will. And even if you try, you will be diverted away from it. It's all a con. It's all such a con. I go back and forth about whether or not to even cover some of this stuff. I love exposing cons. I really do. There's something rewarding about exposing a con artist, especially when they don't realize they're being exposed. But that, you don't get that kind of reward with the mainstream media. That has to happen kind of in a first-person situation, which I've been... it's just people are con artists and they'll lie, okay? And they think people are stupid. And if you just pay attention to them and you recognize these characteristics, you don't have to be a skeptic, you don't have to be a dick. You just have to realize that people will exploit your kindheartedness. Not everybody. A lot of people won't. Most people will not. Most people will be super great and awesome. But there's something different about those who won't. I'm not even going to go into that because I don't want to give bad advice right now. I don't want to go into that. It's just part of this idea of trust that they're trying to build into everyone, program into everyone, is that there are trusted sources and that there are untrusted sources. And that you should trust what this group of people says, and you should never trust what that group of people says. Which is evident in the whole Hunter Biden laptop story where they say, well, it came from Russia, so therefore it's disinformation. Not if it's true, it's not disinformation. I'm not saying it came from Russia, but even if it did, if it's true, it's not disinformation. So someone who you might view as a bad person, or who people might say, you can't trust that person, can tell you something that's true. So people, information should not be judged, in my opinion, based on the source that it comes from. I think sources should be completely taken out of the game. And that's what they tell us should be relied upon all of the time, indefinitely. But if we rely upon that, then what they will do is what propagandists always do. And that is they will tell you enough truths, because all propagandists tell you truths. They tell you. Sorry, I got a little distraction. They tell you these truths. They tell you that you need to rely on this source or you need to rely on that source. Hold on, sorry. There's some chaos going on inside the house. I have to, one moment. I know we're live. I'm sorry. I've just got distracted a bit. I got to kind of recalibrate because I'm having a walkthrough right now. It's not their fault. It's my fault. But I am having a walkthrough, so I got distracted, and it's gonna take me a second to kind of get back to what I was saying. And now we're searching for a key to let the dogs out. There's no key to be found. Okay, a key's been found. Thank you. Okay, sorry. They want you to just rely on the source, because the source will tell you truths. It'll tell you enough truths to get you to stop questioning them. And that is when they tell you the lie. So propagandists have to tell you truth so that they can inoculate you from the lies that they tell you. That is the entire model of propaganda. And that is why we're hearing all these news initiatives about this source or that source. The reality is the best way to protect yourself is to say, screw the source. Even if you trust the source and they have the best of intentions, they'll get it wrong sometimes. They will absolutely get it wrong. Now, that doesn't make them bad. It just means that they're human. So don't trust the source. Look at the information and evaluate the information. That's the best way to protect ourselves. And that's what they don't want us to do. And with all this bullshit about the trial going on, they want to have these sources on these networks be our authoritative information on it. I mean, it's all bullshit anyway. It's all totally bullshit anyway. It's all a fucking show. All of it. Maybe Trump's in on it. Maybe he's not. I don't know. I have not looked in deep enough yet to whether or not Trump was supporting Johnson and sending aid to Ukraine and all that. I suspect he probably was, to be honest with you. I've always suspected that he would probably do that and then try and pretend that he didn't. I hope that I'm wrong about it. I think Trump's funny as shit. I think he's the funniest president we've ever had. But I don't doubt that maybe he did kind of backdoor push that Ukraine aid through. I hope I'm wrong. But I think they're all the fucking same when it comes to that bullshit. And I'm tired of being conned by him. So moving on. Sorry I got so angry. I'm sorry I got distracted too. It's a weird morning. What I want to talk about next is, did I get through all the parts I wanted to get through there? Okay. Yeah. I think the basic point, again, I'm sorry. It was just not anticipating that distraction. Was that they put these transcripts out to try and give the appearance of transparency, but all they were really trying to do was make it look like the propagandists who they're working with are more trustworthy than they actually are. I know I emphasized that point a number of times, but I just wanted to be a little more crisp with it. Moving on to the next thing I want to talk about. So there's a problem bubbling up. It's kind of under the radar with the USPS mail system in this country that could potentially wreak havoc on the 2024 election. In fact, I think it might be in motion to wreak havoc on the 2024 election. And I've experienced the effects of this personally already. So the USPS system, the mail delivery system in Georgia and in Virginia, but Georgia has felt the effects of it far more. It's been delayed. The mail delivery service has been completely delayed for a couple of months now. For example, I received a snail mail letter a few weeks ago from State Farm about my car insurance. It was a car insurance bill that told me what was due for my car insurance, the date it was due, and the date of cancellation if I did not pay it. And the date that I received that piece of mail was the day after the cancellation date that was stamped on the piece of mail. I was fine because I got a phone call from a State Farm agent on the day of cancellation a few hours before, telling me that if I didn't pay by midnight that it would be canceled. So I was able to pay it. But the fact is, had I not gotten that phone call or checked that message, then I would have been screwed. This is not the only way that the delay in mail has affected people. It's affected people with their paychecks. Some people are still receiving written paychecks. It's affected people with medicine. Older people sometimes receive medicine in the mail. These medicines are sitting in a warehouse somewhere, and they're not receiving them when they need them. And it has affected the mail-in votes during the presidential primaries here in Georgia, which the presidential primaries here in Georgia were on May 12th, I believe was the date. And what happened is, I think it was Paulding County, they discovered that they received a bunch of mail-in vote ballots for the presidential primary after May 12th that were postdated back in February. These votes were never counted. The people voted on time like they were told to do through mail-in voting, and their votes were never counted because of the delay in the USPS service. This is a problem, and this is one of the reasons why the Postmaster General, was testifying before Congress last week, telling everyone that he believes this problem will be taken care of in 30 days, which I find that to be interesting because it's been months that this has been going on. This is not a new problem. It just hasn't been reported nationally, but it will be. Like I'm telling you, this will become a national story because this problem ain't getting fixed in 30 days. I mean, what else is he going to say when someone says, how are you going to fix the problem? The election's coming up. Is he going to say, well, we'll fix it next year? No, he's going to say it's going to be fixed in 30 days. Because he has no other choice to say that, but he's given no indication that it actually fucking will. And this is going to cause absolute chaos coming up. And what's happened with this, it's interesting because Georgia, where the problem is predominant, it's like a swing state now, and is the focus of the 2020 election controversy. You still have the January 6th trial going on. This is where all the delays are happening with the mail. Republicans are now telling their voters to use mail-in voting. Democrats used it far more than Republicans did in the last election. Republicans saw how beneficial that was to them. Now they're telling them, you guys need to use it too. And now all of a sudden we have this problem with the USPS mail, which I find to be a little bit, I mean, it's odd because I was doing this research and I verified it before the show that the most trusted government agency in every single survey that's done on which government agency do you trust the most, it's always the USPS. They're always the most trusted agency by the people. Not to say that that's saying a lot, because most people don't really trust any of them, but they're number one all the time, and all of a sudden you see this problem happening, and it's happening in Georgia, where all the controversy is, it just seems to leave the door wide open for them to... It means it's going to cause chaos. I think you guys can see some of the problems that will arise here. And nobody's talking about this either. Everybody's just talking about the hush money trial and all that fucking bullshit. And it's funny, too, because the solution that Brad Raffensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State, is promoting is he's promoting for everyone to register early, to go ahead and, you know, get their mail-in vote ballots early, send them in early, and to use this new tracking computer system called Ballot Tracks to track it. And Ballot Tracks is this software that promises to track your ballot from the moment you put it in the mail until it arrives at the voting precinct, which is kind of vague in the way it describes itself. Turns out what it actually does is it only tracks your envelope, if that. I mean, it's been tested in numerous counties and has failed over and over again. It sucks. It's like shitty software. It's terrible. But, of course, it's got some government connections, and Brad Raffensperger and other states are making a lot of money promoting it. So they're telling people, you know what, you're worried about your vote getting in. Just vote early and make sure you use this tracking software that even if it works well, it doesn't actually confirm that your vote was counted. But the way that it promotes itself and the way Brad Raffensperger and others promote it is that they lead people to believe that if they sign up for this tracking software, that their vote, that they will receive a notification telling them when their vote was counted. But when you go to the website and you read it and you read the stories about it, that's not true. It doesn't actually tell you that because it can't. It can tell you when your fucking envelope arrived. Can't tell you if it was tampered with. Can't tell you what happens after your envelope arrived. It's a fucking con. They're all fucking con artists. And Raffensperger's fucking a spokesperson for this cocksucking technology, which is a piece of shit technology proven to be, that he's pushed as a fucking solution for a problem that he doesn't fucking give a shit about. I'm amped up this morning. I know that. I apologize. You know what? I don't apologize. Hopefully your kids aren't listening. Earmuffs. I'm mad about this shit. It pisses me off how stupid they think people are. And where was I here? Oh, so this is the best part of the delays in mail, which I think are going to have a divisive effect in the 2024 election. Remember that. I think that these delays in mail in Georgia, maybe Virginia too, but definitely Georgia, will have a divisive, controversial effect on the 2024 election. The cause, what caused it? In Georgia, they're blaming the delays in mail on a new USPS facility that was built in Palmetto, Georgia, that was supposed to be this new centrally located sorting and delivery center, like an innovative new thing that they're doing, that is part of a new government initiative to improve the USPS system. The most liked system, apparently, of all of the government agencies they thought needed improving. The problem is that this new center that they built has only a Newman from Seinfeld, like 36% mail delivery rate. They only deliver 36% of the mail. 36%. I have to say, I don't know what that's in comparison to. I don't know how much regular mail is delivered, but that seems pretty low. And as a result of this low delivery rate, the other USPS centers around the state have had to compensate and overcome the problems going on there, which has caused a statewide delivery delay. This is what they tell us anyway. And this facility, which is brand new, it was built. This is the best part of all of this. You're going to love this part about it. It was built as part of a 10-year USPS initiative that launched in 2021 during the Biden administration. This initiative, I can put it up on screen, is called Delivery for America. So they're trying to make sure they modernize the USPS system, the only one that people don't hate yet. There it is, Delivery for America. And
Where's my mouse? Hold on. I think I lost my mouse here. Are you kidding me? Is my friend frozen? Yeah, sorry. My friend is frozen, and it kind of blinked out there. Okay, I'm back now. Sorry about that. All kind of technical difficulties. I'm going to get that off screen. So here's what this USPS initiative, this 10-year initiative, what some of their goals were. Here it is on screen. Of the many goals that they hope to achieve, the USPS in building these facilities, like the one in Georgia here that's failing, as well as the other improvements they're making, the goal that they're trying to achieve is environmental stewardship, reducing greenhouse gases, and advancing the USPS's sustainability goals. That's what they're after. Sustainability goals. How about you get my car insurance bill to me on time and old people's medication to them on time? The greenhouse gases and the rising sea levels, those can wait till after my State Farm payment. That's not the only thing that seems to be, that is listed as a goal of this initiative. Another goal of this initiative, which is screwing up our mail and will cause chaos during the 2020 election, is this right here. And I think you probably can anticipate where this is going. They have a goal of creating an internal culture, of establishing a winning culture that prizes diversity, equity, and inclusion. You can see it on screen there. A stable and empowered workforce marked by opportunity creation, well-defined career development and growth, including non-career employees, resulting in decreased turnover and a winning culture that prizes diversity, equity, and inclusion. And this is all over this document. I don't know if that's just paying tribute to that because they think they need to say that to get financing, but listed as some of the primary goals in this initiative that is causing the mail shortage, which will cause chaos in 2024, is the goal of climate change and DEI. Everything is. That's what everything is. Because I don't know about you, but I'm tired of receiving my mail from a white cis person. If I don't get my mail from a transgender person of color, I'm burning it. I don't need it. I don't want it. Fuck all of these white cis males who have been on top of the mail delivery game for so long. Your empire is over, assholes. Moving on. Brad Raffensperger, Georgia Secretary of State that I've been mentioning because I kind of went down a rabbit hole with him, who's well aware of these problems going on. And as I've talked about a lot, if you've listened to the show, is a central figure in the federal January 6th and the Fulton County January 6th trials because of the phone call where it's alleged in the indictments that Trump threatened Brad Raffensperger. He tried to pressure him into changing the outcome of the Georgia election in that phone call. That's like the main point of both of those indictments. This dude, Raffensperger, was in Paulding County last week where those problems about the vote, the mail-in votes coming in after the actual vote day arose, which is interesting that that happened in the same county that Brad Raffensperger was in. He was there conducting a 2024 election simulation training with police in which he was preparing the police for worst-case scenarios that could arise on election day here in Georgia. He wanted to get them ready. Now, what type of threats might Brad Raffensperger be preparing the police four that might arise on election day? Well, of course, the threat of conspiracy theorists is what he's preparing them for, which in this article, it makes very clear. Here's what it says. It says poll workers like Ruby Freeman were threatened after they were falsely accused of fraud in Fulton County. Raffensperger and election officials have been under pressure from Donald Trump and his allies, and Republican election skeptics spread a barrage of conspiracy theories that in some cases took weeks or months to disprove. This year, it says, police and election officials say they will be prepared. What does that even mean, they will be prepared? They'll be prepared to stop conspiracy theory? I mean, this is like a threat, the way this article is written. How do you know what a conspiracy theorist is, or a conspiracy theory is, before it even arises? Like, how can you pre-prepare for a conspiracy theory? Because a conspiracy theory is a theory about an alternative explanation about something that happened. So how can you pre-prepare police to stop conspiracy theories before they happen? You can't do that. That's an impossible thing. Unless what you're actually preparing them for is to stop people who question the methods of the government, which is what all of this has been about, which is what the entire Trump thing has been about. Whether Trump's in on it, as some people believe, or not, it doesn't matter. What it's about is, it is about making it a crime to question the government. That Trump's entire case and all of these cases are dependent on assuming that it is a criminal act to question the government and believe people outside of the government. So all of this is about. And that is what the Georgia Secretary of State is preparing police officers to watch out for, is people who ask questions. And we're seeing this play out on social media, even in the right-wing sphere. Is asking questions is bad. It's bad. And I agree that some people can ask condescending questions simply to be, you know, difficult. But questions should always be asked, because positions that are mainstream, supported by everybody, have rarely been challenged. If they haven't been challenged, and everybody's accepted assumptions, and that's when things get dangerous. And that's exactly what they don't want people doing. And they're preparing people, they're preparing police to not to fucking target people that ask questions. And here's what they did in the training. They had the police officers break off into groups, and they had them go through scenarios that could arise on election day. And they asked them questions about how they'd handle these scenarios. Here's some of the questions. They said, how would you talk to an angry voter causing ruckus at a polling station? What would you do with aggressive people who claim to be election observers and demanded access? Which is something that was a point of conflict last time, where people who believed themselves to be election observers and had the right to be were pushed away. So what's the definition of all this? They don't tell us. And then they say, they told trained police officers about what would happen if they had to evacuate the place, which one of the concerns they had about evacuating the place in case of a bomb threat was that if they evacuated the voting precinct, it would result in there being long delays, people waiting in line for hours to vote. And they were worried about that because of the problems in the last election with people of color having to wait in long lines. So it's like the police are like, what do we do? There's a bomb threat. Do we risk the place blowing up, or do we risk people of color waiting in line for long hours voting? I mean, this is stupid, the evaluation process they're going through here. Smaller situations that they train them on is, they said that these could be handled by some election officials, not just police, but they said, how would you speak to a customer? Let me reread that, excuse me. Okay, they said some of the problems, such as speaking in a quiet corner about a voter's concerns, is something that could be handled by election officials. Or countering disinformation on social media platforms. Okay, so they train these police officers and election officials on countering disinformation on social media platforms. And then they said the most heated controversies involved poll workers outside polling. Well, I mean, how far does this go? This is fucked up, man. The guy who led the training, his name is Chris Harvey, probably a douchebag. I'm sure he's a douchebag. He's a former election official in Georgia. He said that law enforcement agencies should approach elections with the same planning as major events like the Super Bowl or large conventions. Police received a 7-page quick guide outlining the Georgia's laws against election interference, violence, violent threats, and carrying firearms within 100 feet of the voting precinct. And the training focused on physical threats at voting locations, and there will be future sessions that will likely include responses to other types of risk, such as cybersecurity, which I didn't think they worried about cybersecurity because they told us the voting machines aren't hackable. And finally, Blake Evans, the Georgia elections director, said tensions are high and you never know what will be around the corner. The way to prepare is to talk through the scenarios before. And I don't disagree with that. What I disagree with is branding conspiracy theorists as the villain of these scenarios that you've created. And that seems to be what they've done. I just wonder, you know, I guess I do get it. Most people don't ask questions. When you find yourself in a group of people, probably not you guys that listen to this show, but the average person finds themselves in a group of people and everybody is being told one thing about a villain or something that's bad and nobody's objecting to it, then even people who quietly object don't say anything because they're afraid that the rest of the group will turn on them if they do. They're afraid it's socially unacceptable. It's a spiral silence. It's that sociology experiment where they have a bunch of people look at a line on the wall, which one of them is obviously longer than the other, but they have all these plants say that the shorter one is longer. And so people who recognize the one that's actually longer don't actually say it out loud for fear of being socially isolated. It's pretty wild. I mean, that is the basic tactic of manipulation that goes on in society, is creating a fear of people, within people, of speaking up about wrongs that they see, but they're afraid nobody else does. And so they remain silent. It's wild. It's really wild. One more thing about Brad Raffensperger. So Brad Raffensperger, and I thought this was really interesting. I mean, this is crazy to me. So as I said, Raffensperger is at the center of the January 6th and the federal indictments against Trump. If these go to trial, Raffensperger would be the main witness in both of them because of that phone call where everybody says Trump tried to intimidate him into rigging the Georgia election, which is, if you listen to the whole phone call, it's total bullshit. But that's what they say in the indictment. So based on the indictments, Raffensperger's, he's a top witness on the stand if we're at trial. Yet despite this, Brad Raffensperger on his own website, and this is on his fucking website. Okay, so there's an article, the feature article on Brad Raffensperger website says, Secretary Raffensperger thanks former President Trump and Speaker Johnson for supporting his efforts against non-citizen voting. Wait a minute, what? The guy who for the past 3 years, the media has, you know, rolled out and said, this is the guy, the phone call, the intimidating phone call. This shows that he was trying to rig the election. Wait, this guy is thanking Trump for something? Wait a minute. That doesn't make any fucking sense. And you click on the article and it says, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger thanked Speaker Johnson and former President Trump. This is the official Secretary of State website of Georgia. This is Brad Raffensperger's official website. Thanked former President Trump for joining his call to ban the non-citizen voting on Friday, stating, since I took office in 2019, I've urged Congress to take action to change the federal law and ensure that non-citizens cannot vote in our elections. I thank Speaker Johnson and the former president, he wouldn't say his name, for following my lead, and I look forward to action finally being taken in Congress. You know, maybe this explains some of why Trump was siding by Speaker Johnson and all of this. Because, I mean, Brad Raffensperger not saying his name. Isn't that interesting, though, that the main witness in all of these January 6th things about Trump trying to change the election, Brad Raffensperger, still taking phone calls from Trump, thanking Trump, must not be that fucking intimidated. It's all a fucking show. What a crock, man. I mean, what a crock. This article should invalidate all of the trials. They should all be thrown out if we're being serious. I know that this is a system of injustice and not justice, so we're not being serious. But if we were, they should all be thrown out because of this. Unbelievable, yet still believable. Unbelievable only if we're assuming a paradigm of justice. This is not a paradigm of justice. It's a paradigm of injustice. One final story, I think, then we'll get out of here. Time is it? All right. Yeah, we'll get a little bit longer. So this is my favorite story of the day. So Joe Biden, Joe Biden doesn't give a lot of speeches. He doesn't get out a lot. He's controlled when he does. But it is graduation season and commencement speeches. A lot of presidents give commencement speeches. And Joe Biden is scheduled to give a commencement speech at Morehouse College, at a historically black college and university that Martin Luther King Jr. graduated from. And Joe Biden is giving a commencement speech there. He's scheduled to anyway on May, I think it's like May 19th. Can you imagine that? You go to Morehouse College, maybe you're inspired by MLK Jr., work hard for 4 years, and then you find out that on your graduation day, the person giving your commencement speech, it's Joe Biden? Well, I mean, what a bummer that must be to have someone who is like a proven racist, who says that if you don't vote Democrat, you're not black, who spends half his time talking about how he whipped a guy named Corn Pop with a chain by a swimming pool when he was younger. This is the commencement speaker at your graduation from a historically black college and university, Morehouse. Obviously, there's going to be some backlash to this, which is why I think this is a setup, honestly. But the backlash, which you would think it would be over Biden's, kind of racist past, but it's not. It's over Biden's role or his position on the Israel-Gaza thing. And what he's being accused of is supporting Israel more than the people in Gaza. And it's just that to me just seems like fake outrage, because there's so many other things to be outraged about Biden giving a speech at a historically black college and university. Why would the students there care more about how Biden has responded to Israel and Gaza than how Biden has historically treated black people? Because you can look at how Biden has historically treated black people, and Biden, not so great. Not the best guy for black people. The crime bill, the Corn Pop, you don't vote Democrat, but he doesn't give a shit. He doesn't give a shit. But this historically black college is upset that this person has... Now, this is all fabricated, in my opinion. And I don't think they would ever let Joe Biden speak at a college like this unless they had some sort of plan, because this would be a disaster. I mean, it would be a train wreck waiting to happen that I would actually love to watch in person. But I don't think that that is what's going to happen. I think that he's either going to cancel it or he's going to record a speech that cannot be booed and objected to in real time, that will essentially be his coming out party for his, feigned appearance to support God, the Palestinians, is what I think. So Biden in his actions has completely been right up Bibi Netanyahu's asshole. I mean, that's what his actions have shown. He's tried to play both sides of all of this by publicly saying, you got to stop Bibi. You got to stop Bibi. I'll suck your dick right off. I will suck your dick off, Bibi, if you don't stop. Let me do it, is what Biden tries to do. But in reality, he just continues to give him all the money and says, leave him alone, cease fire. He's full of shit. He's trying to play both sides. I don't know what I would do if I were in his position. I would never want to be in his position. I would never seek to be president like he has so many times. You have to be a psychopath to do that. But I have a feeling that this speech at Morehouse, it's just so out of character. They would get Stacey Abrams. They would get Kamala. They would get Fannie Willis. They would get anybody but Joe Biden. There's nobody there who wants Joe Biden to speak there. Yet Joe Biden is speaking at their commencement. Why? Why is he doing it? Because this is the knob. There's something that is going to come out of this that is the reason for this speech. It wouldn't happen any other way. They don't fucking let Joe out of the basement. You don't fucking say, hey, how you doing, Joe? Let's go speak at a historically black college and university today where they all hate you. That just doesn't happen unless there's some sort of planned op. This is his coming. This is part of the ops trying to make it look like he's not sucking BB Netanyahu's asshole, which he is. I don't like any of them, man. I really don't. And I know that. Have I talked about this already? I'm so distracted from the interruption I had. Trump might have helped push the Ukraine stuff through. If he did, fuck him, you know? It's just like I'm tired of our tax money being sent to pay for foreign wars. It's disgusting. I'm sick and tired of it. You can't walk out of the fucking grocery store with a carton of eggs and milk for under $120 right now. You can't fill up your gas tank for under $75, $80. Bullshit, and I'm fucking tired of trying to be shamed into supporting sending money over to countries that I don't know shit about, that I don't know who the good guy or bad guy is. I'm fucking, like it's fucking bullshit. I'm fucking sick and tired of it. Fucking Joe Biden going speaking to black college and university. What a fucking insult to those students. Don't fucking send Joe Biden. I feel sorry for those kids who worked hard and they get this fucking prick. He doesn't even give a shit. What a fucking bullshit. Give them Dave Chappelle. Give them someone they can fucking relate to, fucking gives a shit about. Not fucking Joe Biden. Fuck this bullshit, man. Fucking pisses me off. Why do I always get pissed off when I do morning shows? Why is that? I don't know. All right, I'm going to close out with something that doesn't piss me. I'm not so mad about. Let me get this off screen. Joe Biden's a fucking asshole, man. So you guys, and this is another thing about Joe Biden that I'm sure you guys have seen this. But I don't think this is real. Well, let me tell you what I think about this. I'll show it and I'll tell you what I think.
Imagine what we can do next. 4 more years.
4 more years.
Okay,
so you've probably seen that going around on social media where Biden is in the middle of talking and then he looks over at the monitor and he reads the stage directions where he says 4 more years, pause. And then he says pause and people clap. I'm going to play it again. I want you to focus on the guy behind him. If this was a mistake, the guy behind him would have reacted as though it were a mistake. He didn't. Watch it again.
Imagine what we can do next. 4 more years. Pause.
No mistake, because it wasn't a mistake, in my opinion, or maybe it was, but they don't care that it was a mistake. They don't send Joe Biden out to speak in front of people hoping he doesn't do this. Like, this is what we talk a lot about Joe Biden's mistakes, but we have to think about what position the people who are handling him are in. He makes so many mistakes. Do we think that they send him out to do these speeches and that they're just crossing their fingers in the background saying, we hope he doesn't mess up. We hope he doesn't mess up. Of course not. Of course not. They wouldn't let him speak if the goal was to prevent him messing up publicly. They send him out in public knowing that this is going to happen a high number of times. Like, most of the time, if he's out there long enough, something like this will happen. They send him out there knowing that, and I think they do it because it serves their goals. They wouldn't let him go out there and fuck up all the time if it didn't help them do whatever the hell it is they're trying to do. Biden fucks up on purpose, even though he doesn't know it. They want him to mess up on purpose because whatever their goal is, the goal could be that they want him to be an old bumbling man who people think is harmless, which enables him to get away with atrocious acts. That's something that could be argued. Maybe they want him to step down. They want Kamala to step in. Maybe they want him to lose. I don't know what the answer is. What I know is this. They wouldn't let him go out there and continue to do this unless they wanted him to, because it helps them. There's no way. They would not do it. I mean, these people do not leave things to choice, to chance. This is on purpose. I'm not saying Biden's doing it on purpose. He's an actor. I'm saying that they wind him up and roll him out, and they say, whatever shit he's going to do today is going to help us. How's it going to help him? That's the question. All right. Getting Biden off screen there. Getting dumbass. He's a fuck. I mean, Biden's just a dumbass. He's always been a dumbass. He's never not been a dumbass. Even when he wasn't old, he was a still fucking dumbass. What's the last thing I want to do here? All right. I think I got one more thing. All right. All right, here we go. So you guys remember Michael Avenatti, probably. What's up, Hiram? You guys remember Michael Avenatti? Michael Avenatti, who just went on, was the going to be a Democrat front runner for president at one point. Well, Michael Avenatti, he called into the Sean Hannity show the other day, which he's been on the Sean Hannity show before, which Sean Hannity also full of shit. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if Sean Hannity and Michael Avenatti were, you know, feeling the inside of each other with the tips of their little baby penises. They're both fucking stupid and retarded, if you ask me. But here's Michael Avenatti calling in to Sean Hannity's show. I just want you to listen to this for a minute.
All right, New York's a ridiculous trial of former President Donald Trump brought one name back into the headlines, a name you might remember from 2018, Stormy Daniels' attorney, Michael Avenatti. By the way, we reached out to Stormy's new attorney. They haven't got back to us. Meanwhile, Avenatti is currently in prison after convictions for extortion, fraud, identity theft, and he recently told Fox News Digital that he thinks Trump has become a, quote, victim of the system. Earlier today, I spoke with Michael Avenatti about the case from prison.
I just want to stop on that premise there. Michael Avenatti has come out and said that Trump is a victim of the system. I don't disagree. I'm not saying he's a victim of the system. The system is obviously corrupt. But Michael Avenatti, who was Stormy Daniels' lawyer, which this entire case, it's about Stormy Daniels and the hush. So Michael Avenatti has come out and completely flipped his entire position. That's what he's saying here. That he's now believes the opposite of everything that he passionately believed that made him famous. The only reason we know who he is because he took the opposite position very passionately as to what Sean Hannity says that he's taking now. And he just kind of glazed over that. I mean, this is quite an extraordinary flip in perspective. Let's hear him explain it.
Joining us now is Michael Avenatti. Michael, thank you for being with us.
Good to be with you, Sean.
19 years in prison, no possibility of parole. That's daunting. I don't wish that on anybody. I'll be very honest. I'm not going to rehash all the stuff that goes behind this.
How's the sex, buddy?
But I'm sure that reality is now set in. What's your life like in there?
Well, I'm doing fine. You know, I'm very blessed, Sean. I've gotten back in touch with my faith. My family stuck by me.
Does anybody believe that? He's gotten back in touch with his faith. This guy is the biggest shyster anybody ever met, if you remember him. He's full of shit.
You know, 19 years is a draconian sentence, and I've got some pending appeals. It's far in excess of anything I should have ever received, but I'm trying to keep my chin up.
Okay, understand. I'm sure it's not easy. Let me go to the heart of this case now.
So I don't know exactly what Michael Avenatti is in prison for. I can tell you a cursory review of it, that he embezzled. They say he embezzled $300,000 from Daniels, which that 19 years would be too much from that. but he also, at least he's accused of. This is from the State Department's website. Michael Avenatti. Okay, so they accuse him. He was sentenced to 168 months in federal prison for stealing millions of dollars from his clients, one of whom was a paraplegic with mental health issues, and for obstructing the IRS's efforts to collect more than $3 million in payroll taxes from one of his coffee businesses. That doesn't seem like 19 years to me. That seems like he's being punished. I don't know the full details of it, but I'm gonna lean to the side that he's being punished a little harder than he should have, because maybe he didn't cooperate as much as he should have. He's still full of shit, in my opinion, but doesn't deserve that many years. I'll let him continue.
Oh, that is going on in New York. About $130,000, dollars 8 years ago. And you have said you defended Trump as a victim of the system. I think there's a lot of issues involving the statute of limitations. I have issues involving the judge and donating to Biden. I have issues involving potential conflicts with his family. I have problems with how did they get from a misdemeanor to felony charges on the federal level.
Whatever comes up in this interview is how there's tons of videos on YouTube of Michael Avenatti and Stormy Daniels just going after Sean Hannity for Sean Hannity also being one of Michael Cohen's clients.
Lawyer, and I'll ask you that first, when you look at the charges itself and the time frame and the judge donating to Biden and possible other family conflicts, what's your reaction to that?
Case is grossly unfair, Sean, and that's going to come as a surprise to a lot of people, but I strongly believe that. What is happening right now to President Trump, and let me be clear, I disagree with President Trump on about 95% of the issues at a minimum. But one thing he and I agree on, and that is that the politicization of these cases, in this case in particular, is gross, it's uncalled for, and it's flat out wrong. This is an effort to deprive millions of Americans of their choice for president. This guy has been indicted now in four cases up and down the entire East Coast. Sean, in this country, we don't have serial killers who are prosecuted at the same time in four different cases. The timing is wrong, the case is wrong, and he's not receiving due process.
Let me ask you, because...
So yeah, you guys see what Michael Avenatti is doing here, right? He's making his pitch for a pardon if Trump gets elected. That's what this is. He wants that pardon. This is the opposite of everything he ever said.
So you were once, FoxNews.com did an article and they had an interview with you, and they pointed out the one time, quote, most dangerous enemy of Donald Trump, who a lot of people on the left thought would bring down President Trump's, bring down his presidency. And I remember at the time, I actually met you one time, and I remember at the time that you were passionate. You had the media all over you. You had the media even suggesting, some of them, that you might run for president one day. And obviously, you're taking a very different posture now about the case, about where you were then, what you were saying then, and what you are saying now. Is it your experience that contributed to this, or is this the totality of what happened with you and your former client, the totality of what happened, I guess, with Michael Cohen, the totality of what happened in your own life? Explain, it's such a different Michael Avenatti to me. Can you explain that?
Well, I think it's all of what you mentioned, Sean. I do recall when we met, actually, and I recall you and I got along pretty well, actually, that night. But separate apart from that, I've learned a lot over the last 5 to 6 years, Sean. I've been a product of the system, if you will. I've been ground through the system, fighting three cases at one time. I've learned a lot about the media. I've learned a lot about what it's like when the government comes for you, when you're targeted. I've learned a lot about what it means to really get due process or to be deprived of
Poor
due
Michael.
Process. And so, they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, I guess that's not true, because I've certainly grown a lot and learned a lot over the last 5 years. And that's why I'm saying what I'm saying now, and I firmly believe it.
Sure, he's learned a lot of new
tricks. Let me ask you a question. I mean, if you were to testify in this case, you know that the prosecution would want to impeach you as a witness. And
but are you kidding me? Michael Avenatti is going to testify. That's what he wants. Michael Avenatti wants to make himself a witness because he wants to position himself for a pardon from Trump.
And obviously, all the issues you've had to deal with over the last number of years, all of that would be brought up. How would you handle that?
I'd handle it directly. I'd handle it truthfully. And I can promise you that I'd be a hell of a lot better witness than Michael Cohen could ever hope to be.
Yeah, that's saying a lot.
All right. And coming up.
Look, I got to give him credit. I got to give him credit for trying. It's a circus. The main witness is Michael Cohen. He was involved in it as well, even though Stormy Daniels says, you know, he stole a bunch of money from her, allegedly. You know, I'm sure she stole a bunch of money from other people. They're all a bunch of thieves. So I don't bash him for trying. He should at least try. You know, he wants to get into the game too. But man. That's where, to me anyway, the obviousness of how ridiculous this case is. You have Fox News, Sean Hannity, who's a ridiculous person in and of himself, who Michael Avenatti used to just relentlessly bash all the time with Stormy Daniels, bringing Michael Avenatti on to talk about, well, what's how Trump's being persecuted and how Michael Avenatti could actually now be a witness in favor of Trump. It's just so comic booky. I mean, you can't even write a comic book that is this ridiculous, but this is our reality. Michael Avenatti, would you be a witness for Trump? And you have Sean Hannity not even laughing when he says that. God, praise your acting ability, Sean Hannity. I would laugh my ass off if I tried to say that with a straight face. Good for Michael Avenatti to be able to do that entire interview, you know, while doing whatever happens in prison. Michael Avenatti's not the biggest guy, let's be honest. He's going to be a target of something else in there. A grifter never stops grifting with these people. It's I don't even want to say it's unbelievable, because it's not. It's not unbelievable. And I try to stop myself from saying unbelievable or crazy, because things like this, like Michael Avenatti, like Stormy Daniels, like Trump, like all of them, the behavior of all of these swindlers. And look, if they actually imprison Trump and do all that stuff, then they'll cause a civil war if they do that. I'm not convinced that they will actually do that. And I try and evaluate, as I said earlier, what people say on information and not on the person it comes from. And from a surface level view, they're going after Trump. And it's just, it takes away everybody's rights. And I try and tell people this, that all of this stuff happening to Trump is not about Trump. It's about the rest of us and the precedent that it sets. And the fact that it criminalizes questioning the government. That's the baseline for me. So I'm not connected to it based on a personality. I'm connected to it based on what it does to all of us. And I think that's how everybody should be connected to it. But you have all these people come in who are big personalities and swindlers who we listen to them and they say things in such a way where they appear to be empathetic, they appear to be telling the truth because they're good at lying. They're good at looking people in the eye and telling them something that is total bullshit in a way that makes that person believe it. That's what they've been trained at, and maybe not even trained at it. Maybe they just grew up learning to do that. I've met people like that. I've met people who grew up on the streets who they only learned to survive by lying to people and manipulating them. And if you didn't grow up that way, or if you didn't learn to do that, then it's hard to comprehend that other people survive that way, or that other people are so willing to do that. And so we judge other people's behavior and actions based on the way we would act. And we would never do that. We would never con and lie to people and just deceive them, you know, so like look them in the eyes and know that we're lying and know that they, we would not do that, most people. Of course, everybody lies from time to time, but we usually feel guilty about it. And so when these con artists like Michael Avenatti, who just, they can do it without a sweat. When they do it, and of course he's been exposed at this point, but these personalities emerge on the stage and they do it. And we look at them and it's like, we feel like they're telling the truth because we could never imagine ourselves being so sincere and lying the way that some people say that they are, if that makes any sense. I don't know if that makes any sense. I know I've been rambling. It makes sense to me. It's like they create this, they create these rules in society. People who either create them or reinforce them, who operate outside of them, that everybody else grows up and learns to operate within. And we all have morals and stuff, which are good. Morals are a good thing. But they create, not that they create all this, but they reaffirm and they support people operating in this society based on these morals, and they pretend to have these morals that everybody else has. But they know that they don't have those morals. So it's a bunch of people in control that pretend to have the same morals that everybody else has for the most part, you know, different variations. And everybody else assumes that they have. But they're like, ha, 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 we don't actually give a shit about morals. And they just fuck you. I think that's how these people operate. I think people see Joe Biden. He's a nice old man. And Joe Biden doesn't give a fuck about it. He doesn't give a fuck. He doesn't fucking care. Maybe some of them do. I think maybe some of them do. But the ones that do, the CIA is just like, hey, we photoshopped you with a teenager in bed together. Do what we say. You know, fuck the CIA. I'm already on so many lists, man. I shouldn't say things like that. I know I'm already on so many. When I say stuff like that, I don't even mean that against the individuals in any organization. I don't. I really don't. I actually love people. I believe in people. Always have. I believe in the goodness of them. Even people who are like, we're all bad sometimes. Everybody's bad. Some people are worse, definitely. And some people are sociopaths, psychopaths. But I think that everybody, for the most part, most people want to be good, and I think that most people want to survive. And I don't even, when I say F the CIA, I mean that is a, I don't. So there's people that work there that are probably good people that are probably just trying to do something that they think is cool or whatever. I mean, when I was younger, I remember looking into the requirements to be, what does it take to be an FBI agent or whatever, and I was like, I don't think this is for me. But I think some people probably say it is for them, and I don't know that it means that they're a bad person. But I think if you end up in an organization that is corrupt, that maybe once was decent or good, that is, becomes difficult for people operating in that organization to continue on with them without either engaging in the corrupt actions or recognizing it. And it might take time to recognize it. So I don't want to say things that are absolute, that are kind of mere identity politics. And that all of one group is bad, or all of any group is like the worst person in that group. Because that's kind of what I fight against. I like to judge people by individuals. But with that said, I do think there are corrupt organizations right now. And obviously, the CIA and the FBI are one of them. I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. I'm a very hopeful, optimistic person. I'm kind of in a weird mood right now, so I might not come off that way, but I really am. I think that I don't think people need to lie and deceive to get ahead in the world. And I don't think that it's a small pie that we're all fighting over. I think that it's an infinite one. And I think that that's part of the problem, that people don't recognize that. I don't always know how to change that perspective. I think people can be inspired. I think people can also be inspired in a negative way with the media and the division and all that. I think personal interactions can be very, very good for people. I think it's difficult with media and stuff. I don't know. You know, I just know that anybody I've ever interacted with online that has been negative towards me, and this is true, any person who has been very, very aggressively negative towards me, and I've met a few of them in person, some of them were my friends before, that when I've seen them in person, all of that negativity has gone away. It's all gone away. All of the shield and the fat and the built up stuff where it's the distance from the screen, it's all gone away. And we talked and we chatted and it was cool. And none of it's ever happened again. And like, I know we need the internet. We need all that because it is a gift in certain ways, because the information that we can gain when true and the research we can do and the way we can communicate messages. But the downside of it is the interactions that we have that some people can kind of see as being like their true enemy and stuff. When reality is, people on the internet are just trying to get attention. They're just trying to say or do the most radical thing that they think is going to draw the most eyeballs and clicks and stuff to them. And they align with these sides that they think that are going to help them the most. And what these organizers will do, and these organizers manipulate people, is they'll tell them to say certain things, which I know this has happened to people that I know that are friends of mine, and they've done it to me. And they've told them to say horrible things. And I knew it wasn't that person. And as soon as we talked, it was like all that faded away. And it's like, oh, so this happened and that. I don't know what the answer is to the negative side of the internet. I just don't. There's an answer out there, hopefully. I am rambling, I know. And anybody who's still listening, I appreciate it. I do. Harem says, reading from a script, talking about what I showed earlier. What I played earlier. Exactly, they are reading from a script. Everybody reads from a script, man. It's all AI and shit. Let's do something light to get out of here. I almost got a little philosophical on you guys on that this morning. And I'm going to go to my go-to when I want to get a little bit lighter, which is the smoking gun. So, smoking gun. Headline, I haven't read this article. I glazed through it, but smoking gun. Woman busted for seeking threesome. Police suspect 31-year-old forced her way into neighbor's apartment. A Louisiana woman, and you can see her pictured on screen taking a selfie of herself, I guess. Is she taking a selfie of herself, or what is that? She must be standing in the mirror in that selfie. A Louisiana woman last night forced her way into a male neighbor's home and sought to initiate a threesome with the victim and his girlfriend, police allege. Like, I gotta say, if someone's gonna break into your home, I'd say the best case scenario is that they're seeking a threesome. Right? I mean, it's better than them trying to rob you. Am I wrong? Unless it's a dude. If it's a dude, that's not the best case scenario. Dispatched to an 11:15 p.m. harassment complaint at an apartment complex in Monroe, a patrolman was told by the man that upon answering a knock at his door, an unknown neighbor forced her way into the residence. The woman, the victim said, began trying to have sexual activities with him and his girlfriend, according to a probable cause affidavit, which we'll look at that in a second. While the alleged late-night incursion, however, did not result in any three-way action, a woman did end up in handcuffs. Okay. A police canvas of the area located the female suspect at a nearby Circle K. So she fled the scene. They always go to gas stations. She was identified by cops as Shadana Reshonete, Heard, 31. The male victim confirmed Heard as the suspect. they need to show his girlfriend too, because we need to evaluate whether or not he should have said okay. You know, we need to know what his options were. Heard was arrested early this morning and charged with unauthorized entry of an inhabited dwelling, a felony, and several misdemeanors, including disturbing the peace, criminal damage, and resisting an officer. Pictured above, Heard is locked up in a local parish jail. Is there another page? All right, let's look at the source document here. Let's see what we got. It's not what we're looking for. All right, so unauthorized entry, disturbing the peace. She was drunk. Obviously, she was drunk. Simple criminal damage of property, resisting the officer, disturbing peace again. The officer was dispatched for a harassment investigation, made contact with the victim who advised someone had knocked on the door. When he opened the door, the unknown neighbor forced his way into the residence. Began to say, so that's what I want an explanation for. She forced her way into the residence and began trying to have sexual activities with him and his girlfriend. What are the details there? So this guy is in his bedroom, or maybe in the living room with his girlfriend. I don't know where. Another woman comes to the door, forces her way in, and starts trying to have sexual activities with the two of them. What does that mean? Did she come in, whip out a titty, and start trying to shove it in their mouths? Is that what happened? She came in, titty out, trying to ram it into their mouths. I need to know the details of how she tried to force this sexual activity on them. How do they fight it off? We're hiding in a crawl space in the basement. There's a monster trying to force sexual activity on us. Won't stop shoving titties in our mouths. I need to know the details. The officer made contact with a female of a matching description and identified. They don't have any. Usually they have a couple pages of these things. This is bullshit. I need more details here. It's fucked up, dude. I want to know what she did. You know, half the police officers there are reading this police report and they're like, what's their number? They're like texting her later. You know, I'd like for you to force some activities on me. What's the probable cause? Nothing. There's nothing here. This is very disappointing. All she was seeking was a thruple. That's all she wanted, was a fucking thruple, and she couldn't get it. What else we got? Look at this one. These headlines, look at these headlines here. Naked man 60 arrested for indecent scenario. What's an indecent scenario on a Florida beach? There's a lot of indecent scenarios on a Florida beach. Woman called cops over a bad batch of meth. Huh. So naked man arrested for indecent scenario on Florida beach, cops say. A 60-year-old sound engineer went to the beach Saturday afternoon hoping to arrange a sexual encounter or maybe just go home with someone's phone number, according to court records. That's a different. Those are two different things. Those are different things. Having sex and getting a phone number. While such goals may be commonplace, Nauman's unusual tactics resulted in his arrest at Blind Creek Beach, a clothing optional spot in Jensen Beach, Florida. I just say stay away from clothing optional spots. I experienced a couple clothing optional bars in Key West, mostly 300-pound truckers. Not really what you're hoping for. In response to prior complaints about lewd behavior occurring on beach pathways, a sheriff's deputy was on foot patrol when he came upon naked Nauman seated in a recliner chair with a hat over his face around 12:30 p.m. So he's sleeping, is what it sounds like. An arrest report offers an explicit account of the genital presentation observed by the cop. Click here to read the document with its description of multiple rings, a metal chain, and a note advertising passerbyers to please feel free to investigate gently. What's wrong with that? But then it says you can read the document. So it wants us to read the document. While the beach allows nudity, police reported that the pathways are accidentally frequented by parents with children. That's the problem right there. Yeah. And that his scenario is unacceptable to a public beach. But also, if you're a parent with children, why are you taking them to a well-known nude beach? Don't take your kids to a nude beach. If you're on a nude beach, you're not expecting there to be kids around. He was busted for indecent exposure. He was released later that day. And the officer's complete interaction with him was recorded on a body-worn cam. So we have video of the interaction. Show it or don't show it. I don't think we need to see it. But let's see what the police report said. Why? What are you doing with your kids today? Oh, we're going to pack a picnic and me and my kids are going to go down to the nude beach. You're not a good parent if that's what you're doing. All right. Here is, this is what they kept telling us to read, the police report. Let's see what it left out. On March 9th, the police, this is written from the police officer's perspective. I was on foot patrol at Blind Creek Beach. This has been an aggressive and ongoing effort by your affiant due to numerous complaints fielded by the sheriff's office personally regarding lewd behavior occurring in the pathways. So a lot of lewd behavior occurring on the pathways of a nude beach, which should be expected. I was walking down the main path that snakes through the north end of the park. I came upon a white male, of course, walking by, and he pointed off to another subject seated in a recliner chair. So white dude's, he's ratting out another white dude. As I approached the subject, I saw him reclined in the chair. Are there recliners on the pathway? I don't understand. He reclined in the chair completely nude with a tan hat over his face. As I looked at the scenario, I saw the subject's penis completely exposed. The penis and its neighboring scrotum were stuffed into a metal ring commonly referred to as a cock ring. Cock rings are rings that go around the penis and scrotum for the purpose of slowing blood flow out of an erection and can aid in making erections harder and last longer. What's happening? He was reclined. He was in a recliner, naked, with a tan hat on. What I don't understand is the line which says it was stuffed into a metal cock ring. And I don't want to look up cock ring. I do not want to look up cock ring right now. I just didn't think that you could stuff anything into a cock ring. I thought a cock ring is something that you attach, like an earring. I'm very confused right now. I'm very confused. A Prince Albert is what I thought a cock ring was. And not something you stuff something into. I have to look this up. I'm going to get all this. This is awful. I have to look this up. Oh, what is a cock ring? Oh, God. Okay. So like a circle he stuffs it into? I don't understand. I don't understand. I'm too sheltered to understand this. I wonder if the police officer immediately knew the answer. Like the police officer immediately, he saw that and the cop immediately knew all of these things. Yeah, that's my expertise, cock rings. Additionally, each of the subject's respective testicles were also stuffed into their own metallic ring. The main ring was tethered to a metal chain that extended out between the subject's legs to to stick to a stick that was shoved into it. Let me read that again. The main ring. Additionally, each of the subjects' respective testicles were also stuffed into their own metallic ring. The main ring was tethered to a metal chain that extended out between the subject's legs to stick to a stick that was shoved into the ground. Like a Bosie ball or whatever that's called, except your cock. The end of the chain had a metal ring, and it was attached to the stick and suspended to the chain in the air. What the fuck? This is a very elaborate relaxation session. I'm going to go lay down and recline for a minute. Put stick in ground, shoves dick and balls in cock ring, attaches to stick. How long did it take the cops to get here is what I'm asking, because this is like at least 20 minutes to set this whole thing up, right? People had to walk by watching this guy just stick the thing into the ground, shove his dick in balls. This is not something that you just casually can do in an instant, is it? I don't know. The end of the chain had a metal ring and was attached to the stick and suspended to the chain in the air. At the base of the stick was a cloth laid out and had a note written on it. So he wrote a note. The note reads, "Hello, please feel free to investigate gently." And then he drew a cat. And then it says cat face drawn. Maybe he's speaking to cats. What's the cat face? Because a person like this has gone beyond shame. And if you're on a nude beach and you're doing something like this, you're inspired by somebody, right? So there has to be other instances of people doing similar things on these nude beaches that inspired him to one-up them or try to one-up them. What inspired this man? What else? What other people have their genitals attached to a stick in the ground and some cock rings and emojis drawn on note? What else is happening at this beach that for some reason parents are like, "Hey, let's take our children to"? Dumb fucks. I addressed the subject, who identified himself as Leighton Paul Nauman. He was born in 1963. Oh, old balls. I told him the behavior is unacceptable at a public beach. It'd be funny if he was like, "Unacceptable at a public beach, but perfectly okay in my mouth," said the police officer. But that's not what it says. Unacceptable at a public beach. That although allows nudity on the beach is frequented at times accidentally by parents. Which, how do you do that accidentally? I mean, the guy's in the walkway with his cock attached to a fucking stick of wood in the ground. How do you accidentally take your kids to this beach? Nauman got up and dressed, and I placed him under arrest for exposure of sexual organs in a vulgar and decent manner. And then I took him back to my place. Blind Creek Beach is designated as clothing optional. However, Nauman was putting himself on display in a public walkway path that leads to multiple beach access and attached a device to his penis and scrotum sack with a chain and a note that read as an invitation for passersby to grab onto the chain and gently tug onto the chain, which is attached to his penis and scrotum sack, as though he was baiting a sexual encounter. So he was a fish trying to be hooked. Again, if you walk your child past this person, you're the problem. You, the parent, are the problem for not recognizing the problem before you walked past it. You're approaching a beach where I'm imagining there's dozens of people with their scrotum and testicles attached to wood sticks baiting people to grab them. And you continue forward. Go to a different beach. Go to a beach where there's not naked guys stapling their dick to wood post in the ground. Go to a different beach, parents. I read Newman's Miranda warning, and he acknowledged understanding his rights. During my questioning of his intentions, and then it's redacted. So they're going to redact something now? After all of this, they redact something right here? He acknowledged it was a bad decision. That's at least, it's good. He said he was just hoping to meet someone and go back to their house for a sexual encounter. I want to get laid. I'm going to go stick my balls into the sand with a wooden stake. Oh, my goodness. I just wanted to get laid. He wanted to go back to their house for a sexual encounter, or maybe just go home with someone for a phone number. That's a lot. That is a lot. Like, that's a lot to do for a phone number. Maybe the police officer gave him his phone number. On March 9th, Newman was at Blind Creek Beach, located in St. Lucie County. Again, a clothing optional beach. He exposed the sexual organs in such a manner that is completely out of scope of acceptance of the beach facility. The manner in which he presented his penis and scrotum sack tethered, it's repeating everything, tethered to the chain and cock ring and the handwritten note. Elevated to a vulgar and indecent manner of genitalia presentation at a public beach. I think that's an interesting line. I know you've heard this, but I'm going to read it again just for the sake of the way they framed it here. They said the manner in which Nauman presented his penis and scrotum sack tethered to a chain and cock ring and a handwritten note inviting passerbyers to gently investigate elevated his act to a vulgar and indecent manner of genital presentation at a public beach. So I guess there's a chart. You have a chart of acceptable and non-acceptable genital presentation at a public beach. And he redlined on that chart. He went above acceptableness. So you can show your scrotum and balls on a public beach as long as there's not a note attached inviting people to explore it. So you can wave it around. You can, fish with it if you want to, pretend to fish with it. You can rub it in the sand. You can, maybe write a letter in the sand with it. But you can't attach a note and stake it to the ground with wood. I think these rules need to be clear to people on public beaches. What can and what you cannot do. How does he know? Poor guy. The complete interaction is recorded, which includes audio. Okay. So that was an interesting story. All right. Well, I would say that was the strangest story that we covered today, but it wasn't. The actual regular news is more offensive than a guy stapling his balls to the sand and writing a note that he would like people to explore his scrotum. So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and close out the show. I thank you guys for continuing to listen if you have. It's been a bit of a strange morning. But I will be back later this week, and I will talk to you next time. Have a fantastic rest of your day.